Genesis 41, 1 through 4.
When 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile when out of the river came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the 7 sleek, fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up.
I mentioned something in our church e-newsletter this week, and that is that there's a blessing in having to prepare a sermon each week. I don't like sermon preparation, okay? But there's a blessing in having to go through that process every week. There's a blessing that comes from having to study a particular passage or maybe a particular topic, because you always grow from the experience. And so being forced to do it on a weekly basis is really a good opportunity. I've heard it said that the best way to learn something is to know that you're going to have to teach it or explain it once you're done reading it. When you know that you have to explain something to somebody else, it changes the way you read it, the way you take it in, and the way you process it. And so, again, that's one of the great values of having to preach every week, because it affects the way you approach the text or the topic. And the person who has to explain it or teach it ends up getting the biggest blessing. And I especially feel that way about this Joseph sermon series, because I'm actually looking forward every week to studying it, because, I mean, I have heard this story literally, you know, probably hundreds of times having grown up in the church. And it's so neat every week to learn, get new insights, and see things that I had never seen before, and to be blessed by that experience. So I hope you're getting a lot out of this series, but even if you're not, it's good for me, okay? So we're going to keep doing it. I guess that's the bottom line, is we're going to continue this thing. Now, when we finished last week, Joseph had been abandoned once again. That's one of the stories of his life, is abandonment. And he's abandoned in an Egyptian prison cell. He has correctly interpreted the dreams of 2 of Pharaoh's officials, people in his cabinet, the cupbearer and the baker. One was a great interpretation, in that the cupbearer was restored to his position out of prison. The other one was not so good. The baker, he ended up getting impaled on a pole and his body was eaten by birds. But in both cases, Joseph correctly told what the future held for these guys. And the cupbearer had promised that when he got out of prison that he would remember Joseph and do something about Joseph being stuck in prison. But no sooner did the cupbearer get out of prison that he just completely forgot about Joseph. And so Joseph continues to languish in a prison cell with really no realistic hope of ever getting out. And that's where we're going to pick up the story this morning, is Joseph just sitting there 2 years later after having interpreted a dream. And we begin in chapter 41. It says, when 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile when out of the river they came up 7 cows, sleek and fat. Now, I always thought that sleek meant skinny. Apparently it doesn't. Can you be sleek and fat at the same time? Apparently it can. Okay. These 7 cows were sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the 7 sleek, fat cows, and then Pharaoh woke up. All right, now I want you to imagine that you are in Pharaoh's court. You're one of his assistants. And he calls you in one morning, and he relays the dream, this specific dream, to you. Would you have a clue what it means? 7 ugly, gaunt cows eat seven sleek fat cows. What in the world does that mean? Now, because you know the story, you may know the interpretation, but if you've never heard the story before, what in the world does that mean? And just to add to the pressure, interpreting a dream was a big deal back in those days, because if you did it incorrectly or you interpreted it in a way that the dreamer didn't like and it was a person of importance, you'd get executed. All right, so there's a lot on the line. What are you going to tell Pharaoh that this dream means? And don't mess up. You got to get it right. Now, if you've been here in prior weeks, you'll know the answer to this question. In the ancient Near East, does a single dream by itself have any significance? No, is the correct answer. A single dream by itself has no significance. It's just a dream, okay? No big deal. That's why what happens next is important. Pharaoh fell asleep again and had a second dream. Seven heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, seven other heads of grain sprouted, this and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the seven healthy full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been another dream. In the morning, his mind was troubled, so he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but no one could interpret them for him. Why was Pharaoh so bothered by these dreams about cows eating cows and about grain eating grain? Why was he so bothered? Because Pharaoh knew that these dreams contained important information. These weren't just dreams. And they weren't just dreams about, what the stuff we dream about, some relationship that you're having trouble with. He knew this was a big deal. It didn't just represent his mother or something. Okay, he knew it was a big deal. But he had no key to unlock and get the meaning out of it. So he's got to figure out what do these dreams mean. And on his own, he's not able to figure them out. He doesn't hold the key. And so Pharaoh calls in his experts, the magicians and the wise men of Egypt, people who were trained in the arts of magic and so on. But they couldn't do it either. They didn't have a good answer either. Now, this is a significant moment in the story, even though on the surface it doesn't look that way. And the reason it's significant because this is the first time in the Bible where you have a clash between pagan gods or pagan magic and the one God. Now, in this clash, as you're going to see shortly, the one God is better than pagan magic. But this is the first time that those two have come head to head. And what we see here is that pagan magic cannot interpret this important dream. And God is about to do it. God is about to do what pagan magic cannot do, which is a significant theme in the book of Genesis as well as in the story. Now, this clash will occur later again in the book of Exodus. You may be familiar with the account where Moses and Aaron go into Pharaoh's court, and Aaron throws down his staff, and it becomes a snake. And then Pharaoh's magicians do the same thing. They throw down their staffs, and they become snakes. But what happens? Aaron's snake or his staff swallows the magician's snakes. Okay, so again, you have the one God defeating pagan magic. All right, but this is an even more dramatic case because Pharaoh's magicians can't interpret his dream. The pagan people can't do what they're supposed to do. But the one God, as we will see, is able to do that. Now, right at this point, the chief cupbearer suddenly wakes up and he remembers something. Verse 9. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "I remember my faults today." Okay, the chief cupbearer wakes up and he says to Pharaoh, I remember my faults today. And in Hebrew, in the Hebrew language, it literally says, I remember my sins today. What was the chief cupbearer's sin that he remembers? Ingratitude. We talked about that last week. He had forgotten about the promise he made to Joseph in prison. And he remembers now. He wakes up. He had completely forgotten. Now, here's the question. Was it a good thing that the chief cupbearer forgot about Joseph until now? What if the chief cupbearer had in fact remembered Joseph as soon as he got out of prison and had made arrangements for then Joseph to get out of prison too? Joseph might not be available now to interpret Pharaoh's dream. We don't know, but perhaps it really was a good thing that the chief cupbearer forgot about Joseph. Nevertheless, the Bible makes it clear what he did was a sin. It was a fault. And once again, we have this theme that occurs in the story of Joseph. And that is that people commit sins, they commit faults, and yet God is able to take what they have done, take their sins, and still use them to accomplish his purpose. Somehow, God is going to get Joseph to Egypt so eventually he can save his family. But along the way, there are people who sin. There are people like Joseph's brothers who do what they do, and there are people like Mrs. Potiphar who do what she does. But none of these people are able to completely frustrate the will of God. God's will is going to be done somehow, some way. And that's an important theme for our lives. There is no sin, there is nothing that anybody can do to completely frustrate the will of God. His will be done. It may take longer, it may take a more circuitous route, but God's will be done. All right, Genesis 41, verse 10. It says, Pharaoh was once, now the chief cupbearer, he wakes up and he begins speaking to Pharaoh. This is what he says. He says, Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. And each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was hanged. Now, Pharaoh is immediately convinced by what his chief cupbearer tells him. After all, this is one of his key cabinet members. So just based on this simple testimony right here, Pharaoh is convinced that this Hebrew slave might be able to help him. So immediately, Joseph is summoned from the prison. It says, so Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream, and no one can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. What does Joseph say? I cannot do it. Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. It has now become really clear to Joseph that this whole thing is not really about him anymore. That all this is about what God is doing through him, but it's not about Joseph anymore. Joseph is really merely a mouthpiece for God. Joseph can't interpret dreams, but God can. And he makes that clear. And in this regard, this sense of being a mouthpiece for God is very similar to the story that happened in the book of Exodus, where Moses and Aaron confront Pharaoh as well. And they too are a mouthpiece for God. When they go before Pharaoh, it's not about them. It's not about what's best for them. It's about what God is doing through them. And they are simply the mouthpiece that God uses to speak. And this is really clear now to Joseph what his role is. So in verses 17 to 24, Pharaoh recounts his dreams to Joseph, and I'm not going to take the time to show the scripture that recounts it. You already know what the dream is that Pharaoh has had. So Pharaoh recounts his dream to Joseph, and then in verse 25, then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good hairs of grain are 7 years. It is one and the same dream." In other words, the dream mean the same thing. "The seven lean, ugly cows that came up afterward are 7 years, and so are the seven worthless heads of grain scorched by the east wind. They are 7 years of famine. It is just as I said to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow, and then all the abundance in Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will ravage the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered because the famine that follows it will be so severe. The reason the dream was given to Pharaoh in two forms is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon." God will do it soon. Now, there's an interesting problem in this text here. And the problem is that Egyptian pharaohs were considered to be God, or at least part God. There was no one above Pharaoh. And in this text, Joseph explains the dream to Pharaoh, what it means: 7 years of 7 years of good, and then 7 years of famine. And what does Joseph say will be the reason for the two? Why does Joseph say that there were two dreams? Because God has confirmed it, and God will cause it to happen. Who's in control of the universe? God is. That's what Joseph is saying. Now, the next thing that Joseph does is interesting. In verses 33 through 36, he says, "And now let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of these good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. This food should be held in reserve for the country to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so that the country may not be ruined by the famine." What's interesting about this is that Joseph suddenly switches roles here. He goes from interpreting a dream to giving Pharaoh advice. And the advice is not asked for. Pharaoh doesn't say, "Well, what do you think we should do, young man?" Joseph just starts telling him what he should do, which is a big thing for a foreigner slave to come in and do to Pharaoh, just start giving advice. It doesn't show a lot of respect necessarily. I'd have to say that Joseph is a man of pretty deep faith at this point. He's pretty convinced that he's on a mission from God, and this is what he's supposed to do. There's just this absolute certitude. He's just going to say the truth and let the chips fall where they may. Well, fortunately for Joseph, Pharaoh likes it. He says the plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials. Why did Pharaoh believe Joseph so readily? Here's someone right out of prison. Why should he believe Joseph so readily? Perhaps Joseph had a lot of charisma. I think that might be part of it. I also think that Joseph's words just had a ring of truth about them. You know, when you're stuck with a decision, you're wrestling with a decision, and you start weighing different alternatives that you can take, and you can't get comfortable with any of them. They're all, good solutions, but you just can't get really comfortable with any of them. And then someone comes along and gives you a new alternative you hadn't considered, And as soon as you hear it, you know that's the right answer. And you're not sure why you know, you just know in here that it's the right answer. It just sits well with you. My sense is that this is probably what happened with Pharaoh. Joseph's words just had this ring of truth about them, and he knew that what this Hebrew kid was saying was the truth. And so he believes him. He buys into it. Especially because Joseph also didn't just have an interpretation, but Joseph even had a solution to the problem, and leaders always love people with solutions. So maybe that's why he liked it too. Anyway, he liked what Joseph said. And so in verse 38, Pharaoh asked them, saying to his court, "Now, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?" And I started talking about this a minute ago. In this text, there's a problem because Pharaoh is now referring to a God other than himself, and Pharaoh is God. So how can Pharaoh, who is God, refer to a God other than himself? And this is one that a lot of commentators have wrestled with. You know, this doesn't even make sense. And the only answer that makes sense to me is that this Pharaoh was not an Egyptian Pharaoh. We know from history that during this time period, about this time period, there was a Semitic group of people who came into Egypt, and they were called the Hyksos, and they took over certain parts of Egypt and actually ran things for a while. And so there's a good chance that this Pharaoh that Joseph is talking to is not an Egyptian Pharaoh, but a Hyksos Pharaoh who could have then believed in a God other than himself. To me, that's the only thing that makes sense. By the way, this is just completely an aside. When you get to the book of Exodus, a famous text, I think it's Exodus 1:8, says that a new Pharaoh came onto the throne, one who did not remember Joseph. You know that text? A new Pharaoh who did not remember Joseph. Now, a question would be, well, if the Egyptians who kept good history, and they did keep good history, how could they not know about Joseph? The answer to that question is, if in fact this was a Hyksos Pharaoh, that when the Egyptians came back into power, they completely wiped out all records of anybody from the outside who had been in power. So the Pharaoh who was in power during Joseph's reign, his record was probably wiped right off the Egyptian books. That's how a Pharaoh could come along later and who had never heard of Joseph, had no clue who the guy was. Just complete aside. Okay, but probably this was a Hyksos Pharaoh, not an Egyptian Pharaoh who was speaking. Okay, verse 39. "Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you.' So Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt.' Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command, and men shouted before him, 'Make way!' Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. And then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift hand or foot in all of Egypt.'" Now you notice who does all the talking here. Pharaoh does. Three different times in this passage, this section, it says, "Pharaoh said, Pharaoh said, Pharaoh said." Now, I would ask, why doesn't Joseph have anything to say here? I mean, this is a pretty big transition that's taking place. Probably for the good reason that Joseph is absolutely stunned. Stunned out of his mind. Literally, in one day, he has gone from prison to second in command of Egypt. You know, his head is just literally spinning. He's dumbstruck. If you think going from being the mayor of a town in Alaska to a vice presidential candidate is a big jump, okay, that's nothing compared to what Joseph did. Okay, this is just a huge step. But here he is. Here he is. And so in verse 45, it says, Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zephnath-Paneah and gave him Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah. Now, that's not Potiphar, Potipharah, priest of On, to be his wife. And Joseph went throughout the land of Egypt. Do we have any would-be parents here who are looking for a good, strong, biblical name for their son? Zephnath-Paneah is a good option. Okay, I don't think that one's been taken. But that's what he called Joseph. He gives him this name, and the name simply means the revealer of hidden things, which in Pharaoh's mind is exactly what Joseph is, the revealer of hidden things. Now, I want you to think about everything that Pharaoh, at this point, in a matter of maybe just one day, has given to Joseph. He's given him an Egyptian name. He's given him Egyptian clothing. He's given him pharaonic jewelry, a signet ring, and so on. He shaved him like an Egyptian. And now he gives him an Egyptian wife. And the question at this point is, who is Joseph? Is Joseph a Hebrew or is he an Egyptian? To everyone around him, Joseph looks Egyptian. He sounds Egyptian. I'm sure he speaks Egyptian. He has Egyptian authority. He's married to an Egyptian. Who is he? Is he a Hebrew or is he an Egyptian? And it's an important question because that's going to come up in just a minute. Who is Joseph now at this point? Who is he at the core? Verse 46, Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from Pharaoh's presence and traveled throughout Egypt. During the 7 years of abundance, the land produced plentifully. Joseph collected all the food produced in those 7 years of abundance in Egypt and stored it in the cities. In each city, he put the food grown in the fields surrounding it. Joseph stored up huge quantities of grain like the sand of the sea. It was so much that he stopped keeping records because it was beyond measure. For 7 years, Joseph does exactly what he had advised Pharaoh to do. Just collect all the food that you can, because he and Pharaoh know what is about to come. Now, in verse 50, it says, before the years of famine came, so when things were still good, two sons were born to Joseph by Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh and said, it is because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. And the second son he named Ephraim and said, it is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. So Joseph has two sons. He names them Manasseh and Ephraim. And just kind of a side note, to this day, in a Jewish household, on Friday night, a Jewish father, if he has a son, will say a blessing over him. He will say, may you be like the sons of Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim. And these are the two guys that are mentioned right here, Manasseh and Ephraim, the sons of Joseph. Now, I want to focus on the name of the first son here, Manasseh, because it's very interesting what Joseph named him. Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh and said, it is because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. Joseph sounds kind of bitter here. God has made me forget all my trouble and my father's household. Basically, Joseph is saying, I want to forget about my family back where I came from. I want them out of my memory. I don't want anything more to do with them. And this goes back to the question I asked a minute ago, who is Joseph now? Is he Hebrew or is he Egyptian? And based on the name of this first son, maybe he doesn't want to be Hebrew anymore. Maybe he doesn't want anything to do with his family or his father. Now, it's understandable that he would want to forget about his brothers, okay? I mean, these are the guys who completely betrayed him and wanted to kill him. So it's understandable that he would want to forget about them. But what about his father Jacob? Joseph is now second in command in all of Egypt. It would be no trouble at all for him to send some delegates from Pharaoh's court back to Canaan to check on his father and see how he's doing and let his father know that he's alive. That would be no trouble at all, but he doesn't do it. Why not? And it makes you wonder what he really thought of his father Jacob at this point. That he names his son, basically, I want to forget about my dad and where I came from. A lot of commentators believe that in fact, Joseph was angry at his dad. You know, he had a lot of time, Joseph had a lot of time to sit around in prison and so on and to think, and maybe Joseph came to the conclusion that his dad was the cause of all his problems. After all, if his dad hadn't played such a heavy favorite, his brothers wouldn't have hated him. And his brothers wouldn't have tried to get rid of him. And he would not have ended up in slavery. We don't know for sure, but it seems like a possibility that maybe he's very unhappy with his dad at this point, and he just wants to forget about his entire past and move on. And then he names his second son Ephraim. He said, "It is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering." Egypt has certainly been a land of suffering for Joseph, many years of suffering. And now he has finally found something good in this miserable place for him. And there's no question that Joseph is a man who has suffered. He suffered at the hands of his brothers, at the hand of Potiphar's wife, and imprisoned on false charges. And his sons' names simply reflect the suffering that he's gone through. Verse 53. "The 7 years of abundance in Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began, just as Joseph had said. There was famine in all the other lands, but in the whole land of Egypt there was food. And when all Egypt began to feel the famine, the people cried to Pharaoh for food. And then Pharaoh told all the Egyptians, 'Go to Joseph and do what he tells you.' And when the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt. And all the countries came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph, because the famine was severe in all the world." The famine was severe, but not just in Egypt. It was a famine that affected the entire ancient Near East. And this is really important because of what happens next. Jacob and his family, who are living in Canaan, they're going to feel the effects of this huge famine too. And at the point of starvation, they're going to come to Egypt looking for something to eat. And so word spreads throughout all the known world that there's food in Egypt, and the world literally comes clamoring to Joseph, or to Pharaoh, who sends them to Joseph, saying, "Give us some food." And he's able to supply it to them. And you wonder, what must that have felt like for Joseph? I mean, here he had predicted what would happen, and now it's happening just as he said, but because of his preparations, he's literally able to save the world from starvation. Imagine what that would feel like. And imagine what kind of celebrity in Egypt Joseph must have been. I mean, literally, here is a savior. He must have been just huge. And now the world is knocking on his door. Well, the people in Canaan felt the effects of this, and Jacob and his family are about to starve. And so he sends his sons to Egypt to get some food. And these sons of Jacob are about to get the surprise of their life, something they could never imagine. And we'll talk about that next week. Dear Heavenly Father, we see in this story how life is complicated, and how you work with the different circumstances that come our way, And it's really hard in the middle of all that to see the big picture. So where we are right now in the middle of our lives and our mini Joseph stories, we can't ask for you to give us the big picture, but would you give us the faith to know that you have not abandoned us, and that through all the mistakes and all the sin and all the tragedies, that you're still at work and you still have good things in store for us. May we believe that even when we can't see it. I pray this in Jesus' name, amen.